Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. So how do people build resilience? Is it an innate quality or is it an acquired skill? I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my guest today is Dr. Maureen Ori, who will share ideas that will help you learn to be more resilient and help you stay afloat in work and in life. Now, Maureen says that in the last few years, she completed her doctorate in organizational leadership, is just about finished raising her three wonderful children, and has laid both of her parents to rest. All of this while providing for her family as the founder of the Workplace Learning and Performance Group. And listen, go find that. She's got some incredible content over there. So life has been crazy, exhausting, and exhilarating all at the same time, and has truly tested her personal resilience. So Maureen's passion is to show individuals and organizations how to be more resilient, and she absolutely believes that we can bolster our strength through better leadership, communication, and building strong, diverse teams. She works with business leaders in Fortune 50 organizations and nonprofit associations, as well as local business in San Diego. Her most recent book, which is on my desk, was published in February 2020, just a couple of months ago, a few months ago, and is prophetically titled A Year of Resilience, 52 Ideas to Be More Resilient and Stay Afloat Throughout the Year. And she says, a bit wryly, I had no idea how timely this book would be. I don't think she, you know, knew the pandemic was coming, but boy, did it. Maureen, good morning. It's good to have you here.
Good morning, Denise. Thanks so much for having me. I can't help but smile when you talk about the Year of Resilience because, yes, we are living this more than ever before.
No kidding. It seems like every time we turn on the news, which I don't do, I don't have cable, which keeps me sane, by the way. But every time I go look at news so I can do my own research, use my own critical thinking skills, and kind of come into believe whatever it is that I think feels right to me, it's like I get hit in the face. We all do. It's a fire. It's a pandemic. People are being killed by insane riots. And there's just so much. So I think we have to walk away from that a bit and not wallow in it and go find things that make us feel connected, things that make us feel good, things that make us think, you know what, life is terrific. We're going to get through this. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And in fact, it's funny that my partner in life, we've been together about 15 years, and he, when the pandemic began, just loved to watch the news, and he got really anxious about it and talking about the death rate and the this rate and that rate. And I have a home office. I had to walk away from, not walk away from the relationship, but leave the room. And because I too don't really watch the news, except occasionally to make sure that, you know, the world, I guess, in its way is still there. But it's challenging, and you do have to be purposeful about taking care of you, right? And that to me also means not immersing yourself in the negativity and the anxiety and the stress of the challenges of the world.
Well said. Look, I turned off cable, 10 years ago. Mm. And I'm telling you, my anxiety, and I have never considered myself to be a person who is riddled with or even prone to anxiety, but all of a sudden I realized that I was, and it was because I was watching the garbage on the news. I cut that off, and oh boy, it's like, oh, Denise is back. So try it. I'm telling you, give it a try, because you'll believe what
Absolutely.
You want to believe and what you need to believe, but you don't need all of this stuff smacking you in the head. And we've got 9/11 coming up, I don't know if it's an anniversary, but I hate to even think about it. But I remember when that happened, and I was working from home, as I have done for many, many years. And I remember my now ex-husband walking in, and I was sitting, he came home from work, and I was sitting on the window seat holding my cat who passed away about 5 or 6 years ago at 18 years old. And his name was Sawyer, you little bastard Griffiths, because he was. I loved that cat. And honestly, Maureen, I was just almost in a fetal position on the window seat watching that tower get hit again and again, those two towers. And I was wiping my eyes on the cat, and God bless him, he let me do it. But I remember my ex-husband coming in and saying, how many times have you seen this? And I couldn't even talk. I mean, I had no voice left from, I'm not a hysterical person, but I was at that time. And he said, look, you know all of this already. There is nothing new to be provided. Please stop watching this. It's hurting you. And he was right. And after that, I never turned it back on. I already knew what I knew. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. In fact, I remember back then my my children were young, and I had just taken them to school and got back from, and I too had a home office and was watching that over and over. And then I started listening to the radio as I was driving to and from, you know, putting them off and what have you. But the experts on the radio were saying, don't watch the news over and over again, and especially with children in their house,
because
you know what, they're going to just pick up on all of that. And yeah, so I used to watch the first 15 minutes of news at nightly, and I've stopped doing that years ago. And I agree, it does reduce your stress. And in fact, one of the interesting things that my partner and I have done, we bought a boat mid-June, actually. And this is, it was a dream of his for many, many years. I didn't know until we actually bought this boat, but it was kind of a fluke. And he had for many years said, you know, he'd show me boats and he'd talk about all these adventures we could go on and things we could do. And let me provide a little context that he has emphysema. He was given 1 to 3 years to live about 15 years ago. So he's already living on borrowed time. And he would share these boats and talk about these dreams. And a few months ago, I just got, this sounds horrible, I got tired of hearing it. I'm like, you know what? You've been talking about this for 15 years. Fish or cut bait. Let's buy a boat, or I don't want to hear about it again. And lo and behold, we have a boat. But the reason I share that is there's no cable on the boat. There's no television on the boat. And it has done so many wonderful things for my mental health, his mental health, for our relationship, to just have a place to literally go stay afloat, if you would. But it has really bolstered so many things in our life, just simply having a place to step away to take care of ourselves.
I love that. And that makes complete sense to me. If you can walk away from it, and it's difficult. I mean, I was completely addicted to the news. I'm a political junkie. Hate to even admit that, but I am. I want to know what's going on. I'm intensely curious. And I like to look at things, dissect them, and go, okay, that is pure bullcorn, or let me look a little bit deeper into this. But once I walked off from it, oh my gosh, I mean, I cut cable for so many reasons. The news was a big, big part of it. But I look at TV programming as garbage in, garbage out. Some of that stuff that winds up in your living room with your kids in the room, if you have children, oh my God. So, you know, that's just a personal, some personal reaction,
no,
but I won't
I
have
it
in my house.
It is baffling. It's baffling to have hundreds of channels of nothing to watch because it's all garbage. So.
And a lot of it is just plain old-fashioned nasty. It just is nasty. Okay, so let's get off of that, because I will go for the next 15 minutes complaining about television and the garbage in, garbage out. So I think everybody gets it. So let's talk about you, because you have, you know, we've talked a couple of times, and you have an absolutely fascinating way of looking at life and getting through the things that you get through. I mean, you lost your parents, you built this business, and you wrote a book. Do you sleep? I have to know. I mean, are you able to sleep at all?
I am actually. That's funny. This is actually my fifth book. I've got a couple others that I've written over the years. I look back at them when I've published, and it's about once every 5 years or so. But I didn't used to sleep as much as I do now, and. My perspective on life comes from, well, you know, you're going to go to the classic how I was born and raised type of thing. But I was the youngest of five kids in 5 years. So my parents started with twins, and 5 years later, they finally got it right. And I was number five. and I say that jokingly, of course. But, you know, growing up in chaos is, and we, in some kind, in some ways, we're kind of had to deal with life ourselves, because I'm sure my parents were just inundated with raising children and how chaotic it can be. I only had three, and it was chaotic. But my perspective on life comes, I think, from after now much assessment as an adult, is one of my greatest strengths is strategic thinking, which can be fantastic and it can be really frustrating at times. And the challenge that I face in being a highly strategic thinker is I need to have everything on one page, so to speak, or maybe in one small book, right? The 52 ideas on how to be more resilient really comes from the perspective that everyday people need to build resilience. In fact, one of the interesting insights I've had, and perhaps maybe a self-doubt that comes from life as well, is who am I and who cares about my message? Why would I write the, I haven't survived war. I haven't, been injured and disabled in a horrific accident. And because there's a lot of speakers and writers that share just some horrific stories and talk about resilience, which is fantastic. Well, I'm just a quote unquote normal person dealing with the normal things of life. But yet I think also that's the perspective, is to say even, quote unquote, normal mundane lives, we need to be purposeful and being resilient, having a mindset for being able to conquer some of the daily challenges that come our way.
You know, I completely understand what you're saying, but normal mundane lives, I don't think any of us actually lead that. Our lives are so intricate no matter what we're doing. If we're leading a small life or a major life, whatever it is that we're doing, we still have to live in our own heads, in our own hearts. And I don't know about you, but there's nothing at all mundane about me. I'm kind of nuts and I love it. So why not? But yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, you know, we haven't, you know, had horrible car wrecks or lost limbs or anything, and I love to hear those stories. They say so much about resilience, and I seek them out. You know, people who have gone through just god-awful circumstances or events, and I so admire them. And I look to them to bolster my resilience, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so like
it's funny.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can say I look back at things I've done in my life, and I think one of my other strengths is that of, if you look at the Clifton Strengths Finder, achiever. And it's kind of interesting is that I've been a bodybuilder. I do stand up comedy. I'm an author, a speaker, a business owner, and I sometimes wonder if I'm a bit maybe crazy or scattered or
same. But, same here. It's like settle down, do one thing and do it well. No.
Exactly.
My inner child says, what the heck is wrong with you? Get over it. Let's go have some fun.
There you go.
But like you, I was going to say, like you, I'm the oldest of a whole passel of kids. And when you mentioned chaos, I just did a whole body freestyle. I'm an introvert. I'm the only introvert in my entire family. My childhood was not fun. It really wasn't. Having a whole bunch of kids who are loud, they're boisterous. Thank God we're all voracious readers, so there were pockets of quiet and silence. But, oh my God. I mean, and the louder and more boisterous they got, the more I would, you know, my sister says I completely abdicated my first child, you know, the oldest child status. I hid. I just went in my bedroom. I bought a door lock. I locked them out. You know, we had tall grass on part of our backyard because it was a very big yard, and a lot of it just, you couldn't mow it. So it just, this big tall grass, I would create a fort in the grass. They couldn't find me. Still, nothing has changed. I'm still a highly committed introvert, but now I like my siblings, which took a while. It really did, but God bless them. They hung in there with me. But it's interesting how the things that you grow up with do impact you later, and you don't even know it until, you know, you kind of smarten up a bit.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, actually, so I was the youngest of the brood, and I think being the youngest, what my parents, I remember my father said once when he was introducing me to some friends, he says, yeah, she didn't grow up because of us, she grew up in spite of us. Mm-hmm. And when you're the youngest of five, you're kind of like the trailer that's just trying to always catch up or what have you. But I think it also taught me some independence. It's like, you know, mom and dad are busy. They've got their hands full. If I don't make something happen, it's not going to happen, right? So I got my first job I was a paper girl. Actually, not technically. It's interesting. One of my sisters reminded me of this recently. We had this huge avocado tree next to our house. And I would fill up my little red wagon with avocados. I might have been, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. And now in hindsight, I'm thinking, man, my neighbor's got a great deal. Because I would sell avocados 5 for $1. And they were fresh right off the tree. Delicious avocados.
I love those.
The tree was as big as our house. And so we had plenty of avocados every season. That's how I would make some spending money to go to, you know, 7-Eleven and buy a candy bar or something. But I guess I was an entrepreneur from a young age where I just fill up my wagon full of avocados and go door to door selling avocados.
And see, that's still with you, isn't it? Yeah, that drive. Right. That drive to do and show up and, you know, be a leader, if you will, is still with you. I mean, that's clear through reading your book.
It is. And you know, is it something, kind of the question that you began with, is resilience innate? Is it developed? The answer is yes, right? To a certain extent, we are born with some level of resilience. But at the same time, that advanced level of resilience where you can adapt, you can change, you can pivot, for lack of a better, you know, the 2020 word, right? As you can change, you can respond to the situations around you. And so, yes, you might be born with it and have this innate drive, perhaps, to a certain extent, but then you also have to really learn to be purposeful and being resilient. And I remember I don't know if you remember Terry Anderson, talk about political junkie. This is going way back to when Carter was president. I feel like an old person saying that. But Terry Anderson was held hostage in Iran for
a year. Right.
Yes.
And
I remember when.
Go ahead.
One of the things he said when after he was released or. I don't remember. I think they actually went and got him, but he was being interviewed.
Didn't Ross Perot go get him? I can't remember now, but
yes, something like
it was
that.
Ross Perot,
yeah.
Wasn't it? And listen, whoever's listening to us, go look it up yourself because we don't really know. But I think that's what happened.
Regardless of how he got released, I think he did get rescued, not released. But I remember him being interviewed, and they said, "How did you survive captivity?" And you know, he was tortured and beaten, and all of these horrific things. He said, "You know, I had to choose to have a positive mindset. I had to believe that I could make it through." And that's stuck with me, right? It's just that choice to survive, right? Is not always automatic. Sometimes you do have to really be purposeful. And that's supported by Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, the same concept of being in a concentration camp. He said what he noticed about those survivors is they had something to look forward to. They had kept that positive mindset, and that helped them survive traumatic situations.
You know, it's so interesting that you should bring up mindset, because I've been talking with a lot of people, particularly on this podcast, about mindset and why it's so very critical to have it, to understand it, to develop it, to really work with it. And I was reading that book that you just mentioned this weekend. I mean, yesterday was National Read a Book Day, and I read a book every day. Literally, I have been known to read 3 or 4 books in a hurry because I'm a speed reader. And I do that just if anybody wants to know how I do it, because it's a fascinating way I do it. But I'll open up my Kindle, you know, I'll start reading, and then all of a sudden I'm realizing that I'm looking at the center of the page, I'm choosing a word, and my eye, if you will, expands out to the whole page, and I'm speed reading the entire page very quickly and absorbing it. So I did read the book by Viktor Frankl again. You know, I was able to kind of skim through it because I've read it multiple times before. But you're right. Mindset is pretty much the only thing I think we really have that we can change, and that we can say, you know, I am not going to be cranky. You know, I started to say bitchy, but I shouldn't say that word. But you know, anyway, it's my show.
Word.
I can do what I want. Shame on
me. Good
word. Yeah, I think it is sometimes, and it's, you know, true. But without a mindset that we really take the time to work with, and in essence control, I think we just waft around. Mindset's important.
Yeah,
resilience is important.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny that you say that, because last year I was a part of a small group of people that were working on, we were walking together, we were on a board together, we were starting to share business ideas and strategy, and late in the year that whole thing kind of blew up. And I felt like we had, I felt a loss. And I think I was going through the stages of grief. I felt very hurt. And what's interesting is that I somehow allowed myself to just to get sucked into the hurt, the pain, the negativity of that whole situation. And it's interesting, one of the things I've been working on to help me get through this, I mean, I couldn't sleep very well, which I'm normally a great sleeper. I couldn't sleep. I was gaining weight. I couldn't focus. I was just kind of out of sorts, almost as if it were a death. It wasn't, well, it was the death of a friendship, essentially. But the reason I share that with you is because I did get sucked into that negativity, and I was probably not very much fun to be around, and I just was completely out of sorts for a few months. And there's a author and speaker here in San Diego. His name is Azim Kamisa, who talks a lot about forgiveness. His son was murdered 25 years ago in a gang-related shooting. And he actually has been writing about forgiveness ever since. He's forgiven his son's murderer. His son's murderer has since been served 25 years. And his son's murderer was 14 years old. And,
oh my God.
And long story short, is he talks about process of forgiveness and how we, you know, we hurt ourselves by holding on to negativity, by holding on to anger and resentment. It's like, who, in fact, I think there's a saying he says is, not forgiving is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And I think that's a Rumi quote, actually, now that I think about it, but it's so true. And so, you know, I personally, even within the last year, I've had life present situations that you can choose to learn and grow from. And sometimes that might involve a loss, but sometimes that might mean we have to put our head around, how do we cope? How do we forgive? How do we heal and move forward? Because if we don't forgive, if we don't have that mindset for wholeness and completeness, we won't be whole. We won't be complete if we're holding on to anger and resentment as well. And that can be really hard.
It's dangerous.
Let go of it, right?
Yeah, it's dangerous to hang on to that. I'm guilty. We all are. And I realized when I was hanging on to some deep resentment, it was actually physically hurting me. My stomach hurt. I had headaches all the time. I was irritable. You know, I would snap it. I don't live around people. I think I've mentioned that before. I'd make it a point not to be around people because I'm only good for about 59 and three quarter minutes. And I know this, but even during that 59 and three quarter minutes, I would find myself getting unbelievably snarky for no reason. It was becoming part of me. So I finally figured out by listening, watching, doing some real mindset work myself that forgiving is not a sign of weakness, and I won't forget. I'm not going to forget anything, but I'm also not going to hate you or want to hit you with my car again. So it's like I'm over that now, mostly. But
that's helpful.
But
that's helpful.
It is. It's like I'm not going to try to kill you, okay? But the thing is, I think people don't understand that during that process of forgiving them, it, or even ourselves, that there are going to be consequences for whatever betrayal it was. It doesn't mean that you're going to, hey, yeah, I forgive you, let's be besties again. That's a big no from me. But I'm also not going to waste any more of my very precious time trying to figure out ways to kill you without being caught. I'm just not going to do that anymore. That makes any sense at all. But there are consequences. But the consequences to us are almost worse than the consequences to other people.
No doubt. No doubt. In fact, that's, I think, something interesting is I have reached out to the individuals in that situation over the last few months, reached out trying to rebuild and reconcile, and it has fallen flat. And so I'm thinking this is keeping me up more than it's keeping them up. Perhaps I may never know, but at some point you've got to reconcile, even if it's just with, you know, forgive yourself, forgive them, and become whole again and move on, right? Because you keep looking backwards.
Yeah, there's nothing. Oh, no kidding. Yeah, and I've told people this. You know, there's nothing for me back there. Been there, done it. I've moved on. And people seem to be a bit puzzled by how very stern I am about that. But I don't look back. I look back for lessons only. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that I need. Okay, let's talk a bit about, because you had mentioned to me at some point what we can learn from nature about how to stay afloat. And I think you mentioned that you link it to the concept of biomimicry. What is that?
Yeah. Biomimicry is really what can we learn, what can we mimic that is happening out in nature. And so many lessons of nature and resilience. And I think a lot of it has been talked about even recently over the last 6 months or so, 9 months with COVID, is with people being out there less in the world, how the world has been able to respond. But the specific biomimicry concept I like to integrate into my work on resilience is, I used to call this even a duck can drown, right? A lot of people don't realize that ducks aren't hatched waterproof.
See, I didn't know that. And one of the images I've seen on social media is, you know, the picture of your book and a duck kind of, you know, forefront. And I'm like, what in the heck? And then I dug a little bit deeper and went, oh, so let's talk about that, because I didn't know that either. I mean, I've always lived on or near water. I had no clue that ducks had to be taught basically to float.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, in my research over the last, and I've been working on, my next book is called Stay Afloat, and it's, you know, six keys to building resilience, and which is going to go deeper as opposed to 52 tips. This is going to go much deeper into really the true process of resilience. And I take the concept from the scientific process of how ducks gain their waterproofing and more. So, for example, baby ducks are not hatched waterproof. If you think about it, you see pictures or you see ducks out in nature, baby ducks are cute and fluffy, and mama ducks are sleek and shiny. And the difference between the baby duck and mama duck is the oil that's on their feathers. Well, a mother duck actually will preen. It's called preening, right, where the duck puts the oil on their feathers. Well, the mother duck will preen the baby ducks and put oil on their feathers or rub up against them and transfer the oil from mama's feathers onto the baby's feathers, and then she monitors their exposure to water. And that's why you don't find drowned baby ducks all over the world, right, is that nature is taking care of itself. And then the ducks actually don't develop that oil. It's called a preening gland. They don't get that oil until they're an adult duck, which is about 3 or 4 months old. But once they develop that little sack of oil, it's at the base of their tail, as an adult duck, that little sack of oil is only good if you apply it to your feathers. It doesn't apply itself, right? So you see ducks out in nature always picking at their feathers and so forth. What they're doing is they're taking a little bit of oil and they're applying that oil every feather, every day. They're really just always in the process of preening, which is that sleek and shiny is the oil that's on the feathers. And so that's half the model is we need each other, right? We can't survive. We can't be resilient alone. We do need each other. That's, to me, the lesson from nature there. We also need to develop new skills, new resources, new capabilities. But we can develop these skills and capabilities, but if we don't apply them, it's useless, right? So that's half the model right there. And then if you start to look at the other components of life as a duck, if you would, the concept I like to think about is that grit and tenacity, which you often hear people talking about grit and tenacity. And my image for that is a duck swimming across the pond, right? They're cool, calm, and collected, but they're paddling their little feet off. And grit is a component of resilience, but it's not the only component. In fact, I like to say it takes more than grit to stay afloat, because we do need each other. We need to develop new skills and resources. We need to apply them. But then, yes, we need to get to work, right, and make stuff happen. But even that's not enough. As I was doing my research, I talked to and interviewed an aviculture specialist at SeaWorld here in San Diego, because I needed that proof of concept. And give me a minute, remind me, I'll tell you how I got triggered on this whole duck metaphor. But I was interviewing this aviculture specialist, and I said, okay, so ducks can drown, baby ducks can drown. And he says, actually, not just baby ducks. He said, adult ducks can drown too if they lose their waterproofing. And you can lose your waterproofing. Yeah, if they don't have access to clean water. If they don't have a clean environment, they become mottled. They look like they've been beat up. They've got feathers sticking up out and from their bodies, and they are just not healthy. They can even drown as an adult duck. Or you think of oil spills where they have too much oil, and they and so the lesson there is balance. Right? We need to take care of ourselves with that mindset, the rest, the step away from the news, whatever we need to do to take care of ourselves. In fact, I was recently talking to a client who's a former Army general, and he said, you know, we torture people by depriving them of sleep. And yet people deprive themselves of sleep every single day, right? It's like the importance of health and balance and exercise and sleep and all of that is part of resilience, right? So that balance is really important. And then the final concept in my model is to look at the ducks. I'm in San Diego, right? And so I live near a lake, and every season Canadian geese come down during the fall, and they hang out at my little lake. Well, not mine, but the lake I look at. And it makes me think of they're leaving the north, right? When the weather changes, they fly south. They have a direction. They know where they're going. They're leaving something because it's not healthy for them to stay up where it's now snowing and there's no food or, you know, the lake is frozen or what have you. So ducks use their instinct, and they know when it's time to fly south. And so for me, metaphorically, this knowing when it's time to leave a toxic relationship, a toxic work environment, knowing when it's time to pivot. You know, we have this pandemic. A lot of people have had to change, and they've had almost life-changing awareness of what they needed to do differently in order to be more resilient. And so knowing when to fly south and having a vision for that is really important. And it's interesting, a couple of years ago, National Geographic had it was the year of the migratory bird. and so I learned a lot about from National Geographic that when ducks fly south, ducks or geese or migratory birds, when they prepare themselves to fly south for the season, they will fatten up, their rest, they get themselves all bolstered up, because once they start to fly, they don't stop flying for 8 or 9 days until they reach their destination, which is, you know, a whole nother lesson of preparing yourself for change.
And I've often wondered this, because we're all guilty of this. I'm guilty of this. We tend to not take as good a care of ourselves as we do those around us. I was talking to my veterinarian the other day, and I said, you know, I just realized that I spend more money on, you know, particular types of food for my cats. One of them now has diabetes. She's 14 years old. And I spend a lot of money on Chewies. This is not a Chewies ad, but I spend a lot of money over there. And I realized that between toys and leashes and beds and food, I spend more money on them than I do me, which is ridiculous. It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they deserve it. Yes, I'm in charge of their care. Why don't I take the same care of myself? And I am beating myself to death over this, because I know that I'm not sleeping enough. I don't sleep well anyway. I know that I should be walking the dogs at least once a day. I don't. Well, and my big excuse there is the one, my new little dog has, you know, she's at the very last part of her heartworm saga, if you will. And she's not supposed to go out and walk, but I can walk the other dog. I don't do it. I know better. Mm-hmm. So what kind of mindset do we allow ourselves to lapse into that says, oh, you know what, I'll go to the gym tomorrow, or I'll drink more water tomorrow and put that Diet Coke away, or whatever it is. And why do we do that?
That's a great question. I've actually asked myself that question.
And it wasn't just me.
It is not just you. It is totally not just you. And I think it does come down to that mindset, and perhaps, I hate to say the word, but discipline, right? And I go back and forth. Right. And I will sometimes justify not taking a dog for a walk or not going to the gym, because I need to rest and relax and find my positive mindset. And so that discipline is challenging, especially because it's founded in emotion. Right. If I don't feel like it, how do you?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
How do you recover that?
I don't know. It's one of the things, you know, I've got just one or two things about myself that really bug me. And I like to think that I'm really disciplined and that I am just on purpose and I'm on track. And the second part is I really hate lying to myself, but I do it all the time. So it's like, sure you are, Denise. I am disciplined in some areas, no question about it. But when the ones that require emotion, not so much. I mean, I need to really work on that. And that's part of the mindset, isn't it? Quit giving yourself excuses. Quit taking those stupid excuses. Get your butt up and move it. So I may need somebody to smack me around a little bit and say, have you moved today? Yes. No. Okay, I'm going. You know, that kind of thing. Because I live in front of my monitors. I mean, I work sometimes 10, 11, 12 hours a day because I love what I'm doing. And then I stand up and go, ow, okay, that hurt.
Well, it's funny. A few years ago, I bought myself a a scale, because I, as I said, I was a bodybuilder probably, you know, 10 years ago. And now I'm not, I'm still very strong. I have a lot of muscle, but I have this nice little coating over my muscle called fat, right? And so I've been purposely trying to, you know, get back into that healthy lifestyle. I think the challenges of raising children and doing my doctorate and the challenges of my aging parents that both passed away within 2 months of each other, all of that was extremely trying. And so now as I get back in, trying to get back into a healthy lifestyle and healthy and get back into shape, I bought myself an electronic scale that has an app that once I stand on it, it knows who I am and it connects to the app. So I can't lie to myself, right?
I don't want one of those.
It registers to the app, right? And at first, I loved it, and then I hated it, and then I've gone back. I have this very much a love-hate relationship with this scale, but it doesn't allow me to lie to myself, because I think we do that, right? I'm picking up on what you said, is we do lie to ourselves. Is, oh, you know, it's really not, it's not me, it's the situation. Well,
right.
No, it's really us.
Right. It really is, and, you know, I have a lot of chats with myself, and yeah, I do a lot of finger pointing right at my own self, which is very annoying. So I'm trying to really, when I catch myself pointing at my own face going, all right, Denise, this is tough. I'm going to tell y'all, this is not easy to do. And you can probably point to something in your book that will help me with this. But when I catch myself doing that instead of, oh, I'll do it later. Oh, you know, I'm in the middle of this website. I've got to finish. Oh, that, you know, I've got 100 excuses all within, you know, 5 seconds. I can rattle them out. I'm trying to make myself get up, go outside, walk the dog, wash dishes, just breathe. Sometimes I do what I call the open refrigerator door syndrome meditation. You know, we all do this. We open the refrigerator door and we go completely blank. It's a form of meditation for me. So I'll go open the refrigerator door just so my little squirrel brain can take a break. But it's part of that mindset, and it's also part of just do it. And those can get tough, especially when you're really good at giving yourself excuses. My mother used to say, you really should have been an attorney. You can argue out of both sides of your mouth, sit on the fence, and people will just go, huh? You're very convincing. Unfortunately, the person I convince the most is me, and that has to stop.
Right. Exactly. A colleague of mine who is also a bodybuilder, he was more consistent and disciplined about it. Because we'd go out for happy hour, I had to have wine. He wouldn't. He'd eat salad. Yeah. But he shared with me a perspective. And to me, it is all about perspective, right? He said, you know, if you were to work out 1 hour a day, think about that. That's about 5% of your day.
Right.
In the context of, you know, the big picture, you know, I like the big picture. I'm thinking, oh, so, you know, getting up to walk the dog or make a salad or meditate, do some whatever it is that's going to help your physical or mental health. If you were to spend 5 to 10 minutes a day in meditation and how powerful that can be, or take the dog for a 10 to 15 minute walk, how powerful that can be just for your health. And in the context of your entire day, it's just a drop in the bucket. And so I think that was a perspective that helped me. It's like, really, this doesn't take very long, and you always feel so much better after you've done whatever this thing is you've done, from meditation to eating right to sleeping well or exercise. So I thought that was a helpful perspective. It really is a very small portion of your day.
It is. And I don't know about you, but I am constantly going, okay, I've got to get this done. I can go do this. Come on, come on, Denise. And I'm always yelling at Denise. I almost, this is ridiculous, but I'm going to say it on the radio, so I'll have to go back and deal with it. I am always looking for a way not to do anything good for myself. What the heck is that all about? I'm always doing for other people. I'm on top of the work for my clients. But if I say, okay, Denise, you're going to spend an hour doing this and it has nothing to do with business, instant resistance. There's something wrong with that attitude.
Well, maybe it's the work that needs to be done is finding how it does help your business. You're doing this because it will help you be a stronger, better, more resilient person. And maybe if you connect the dots to that, defy whatever it is you've talked yourself out of, right? Is it by being a better and stronger you, you'll be a better and stronger business person as well.
Oh, I love you. Thank you. That worked. That absolutely works. Okay, I've got your book open in front of me, and this is a terrific book, and I want people to grab it. It's, you know, basically the 52 ideas, and it's almost written. It's an easy, easy read. Each chapter is almost like a bullet point. Like number one is find your center, and it's two pretty small paragraphs, and then you just go on and on and on. So there are so many different ways you can pick this book up and just flip it open. Like I just flipped it open right now. It's 13, Seek Out Kindred Spirits. Well, here we are. I mean, you and I are definitely kindred spirits. And one of the quotes that you've got in here, for millions of years, human beings have been part of one tribe or another. Those who are listening probably know who this quote is from, tribe being the operative word. A group needs only two things to be a tribe, a shared interest and a way to communicate. And of course, that's Seth Godin. How did you, I've read the whole book. I've read it multiple times and I'll pick it up and just flip it. You know, number 21 is breathe. I pay a lot of attention to breathing. I have a brother who is a double lung transplant patient. My entire family has, and I won't tell you what kind of lung disease it is, but we all have it. I'm the only one that doesn't really suffer from it because I never smoked and I pay deep attention to my breathing. It, to me, is very, very important. Stop, take a deep breath. I do it when I get ready to go on this podcast. I do my Wonder Woman pose. I stand up, I put my hands on my hips, I take a deep breath, and off we go. But how did you decide how you were going to create or present these 52 ideas? Where did they come from? I mean, you didn't just write them down and go, okay, here we go. How did this happen?
Well, a lot of it has been pulled from my research over the last decade or so in preparation for my larger book called Stay Afloat. And a lot of it just has come from life, particularly that one on breathe. My significant other has been using oxygen for 15 years, and I watch him struggle to breathe sometimes. And, you know, so a lot of the situations come from life. I've been very blessed to have a few clusters of very close friends that are my tribe, that if I'm struggling, I reach out to. And actually, the whole book, a colleague of mine, my marketing specialist, Marissa Friedman, my marketing strategist, really, she says one day, she says, Maureen, send me 52 bullet points about resilience. Because she's been saying, you've got to get your content out there, you've got to do more, blah, 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 marketing, right? So one day she says, send me 52 bullet points on resilience. I'm like, cool, no problem. I sit down on my computer, 20 minutes later, there's your 52 bullet points. And she's okay, now write a couple paragraphs about each of them. I'm like, oh. So that's how it evolved, but it's tied to the last decade's focus on building resilience and researching resilience and my duck metaphor. And so it's, in a way, it's kind of haphazardly tossed together, because you'll see there's no real theme on that. It's 52 tips. It's not 52 long chapters. As you say, it's a couple of paragraphs, and it's not segmented by category at all. It is intended to be, you flip it open, you've got an inspiring picture, you've got a quote, and you've got a couple paragraphs that if you just need a little pick-me-up, boom, you can, there's 52 pick-me-ups that really are kind of somewhat random in a way, but also informed by research over the last decade.
I love that, and I love the fact that she just said, okay, do this and do this. I do the same with my clients. I do a lot of consulting with them, and you know, I'll do the same thing and say, okay, I need this, 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 and then, okay, now round it out, you know, build it out for me. And they're like, I have to work. Yes, you do. We have to work on this together. But this is where that kind of inspiration comes from, when somebody comes to you and says, Maureen, you know, give me 52 bullet points. And as you go, you realize that it's bigger than you thought it was. And now you've got a book and you've got lessons to, or bullet points, if you will, to show people. And I love this book because I'm telling you, I can pick it up, flip anywhere. 17, thank the people who support you. Why do people forget? Do they just assume we know how appreciative we are? Yeah, there's so many ways you can say thank you. Let's learn. Let's talk about that a bit, because I think that is something that is not really at the forefront of people's minds, whether you're an individual or an organization. How do we really remember, if you will, how to express gratitude for the people who support us and who comment on our posts, our blogs, or just, you know, sometimes you'll get a referral that comes out of nowhere and it's somebody who's been watching you on social media for 10 years and never said a word. How do we remember, I'm telling you, it happens. How do we remember and make it part of who we are to express that gratitude, that deep gratitude?
That's a fantastic question. And I have a few ideas. One is to have a little set of thank you notes that, and here's the concept I use. I use the TSA motto. If you see something, say something. Or if you think something, say something. From the positive perspective, right? Not the terroristic perspective.
Right. But
how often throughout our day do we stop and we, you know, we're triggered? Oh, wow, I really thank, you know, I remember Sally. She did this for me. Or she even just shared something on social media. It could be a simple text or an email. It could be a thank you note. But have something at the ready and maybe even make it a goal once a day to send someone a message of gratitude, whether it be in hard copy handwriting or just on a message or a voicemail or something. Maybe make it a goal to express that gratitude randomly, or the whole if you see something, say something. When someone does something, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, you witness a random act of kindness. You witness just someone being positive and supportive, but you don't say anything about it. Is when you witness something like that, it could be a complete stranger, it could be a family member, it could be a colleague. Acknowledge it. Say, wow, I'm really touched by that. You know, whatever. And that kind of gesture can go a long way. Just a simple thank you can be very powerful.
And it makes you feel better as well. I mean, because you're doing something that expresses your gratitude, that immediately rebounds to you and you stand up a little bit straighter. You feel better because you made somebody else feel happier, and not deliberately, you know, because it is random and you do want to just be aware and be happy that you saw, you know, what you saw or whatever it was that they did. And it does make you feel better. No question about it.
Absolutely. And I would be remiss if I didn't do a shout out right now, a thank you to Charlie Constantin. Charlie is my virtual assistant and has been helping me with social media marketing and a variety of other things over the last couple of years. And she was a key integral part of helping this book get done, is when I had the 52 ideas. I'm like, all right, Charlie, I need some help with this. I've got these ideas. Let's talk about it. Let's get a draft together. And she was an incredibly integral part of making this book happen. And so, and she's mentioned in the foreword, but I, you know, she's an amazing writer. She's young, she's focused, and this book would not have happened without her help. So I have to give a shout out to Charlie. Thank you, Charlie. You are truly amazing.
That is lovely. Say her full name one more time.
Charlie Constantin, without an E at the end. I often used to call it Constantine, but I was corrected. It's Constantin. She's now working and living in Paris. So, yes.
And see, that's how you do it. You know, you just, all of a sudden you think, I've got to do this. And now we both feel better. Feeling bad
Absolutely.
To start with. But I love hearing that kind of... of story. So let's talk about, wow, we've only got about 5 more minutes. This has gone really, really quickly. Let's talk about resilience for both individuals and organizations. Are they different?
In some ways, yes. I believe, though, that resilient organizations are built with resilient people. However, with organizations, there needs to be some systems and processes in place. Well, I guess with individuals, there need to be systems and processes in place also, but the systems are different. For an organization, for example, I think one of the top statistics is people leave organizations because of a boss, right? It's one of the top 2 reasons people leave organizations. They will leave because of a boss, a toxic boss, and they will stay because of a fantastic boss. And I think how we develop leaders and how we develop that positivity with leaders and helping leaders support their employees is really crucial to the success of an organization and the resilience of an organization. But additionally, having systems in place for whether it be EAP, employee assistance programs, or and what I've heard a lot even in throughout the pandemic is communication, right? Organizations, if there's this out of sight, out of mind mentality, if an organization has shifted to 100% virtual work, you have to increase your communication as a leader and as an organization, probably 2 or 3-fold, because employees will feel forgotten about. I've worked for an organization, I've worked from home for the last couple of decades, and it was all they being the organization, I will not name the organization, would have these, hey, let's have an all-staff meeting and forget about the 4 or 5 of us who are out in the field, and there'd be no invitation, there'd be no inclusion.
Yeah.
There'd be, oops, we forgot about these 4 or 5 employees that are out there in the country doing the work, and while you're all out having this picnic, and so that mindset for inclusion, that increase in communication, transparency is really important. Organizations and leaders can't assume that employees are okay stranded on their own, right? Even if they're seeing the work product being done, there really has to be that mindset for inclusion on, for all of the folks around. And inclusion goes beyond just that virtual inclusion, of course, the inclusion for different styles, different races, different perspectives. Is the diversity is where our strength is. And so we need that mindset for inclusion, but even more so now as we're all virtual, because it's easy to forget that you've got a whole tribe, if you would, a whole tribe of people out there working for you that need some encouragement along the way. And that will help the organization be more resilient.
Understood. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because look, you work from home. I work from home. I'm a nerd in stilettos. I mean, give me a keyboard and I'm a happy person. But so many people who all of a sudden have had to leave their cubicle, if you will, or their office, and now they're working from home. Their husband's in the house talking to them. Their kids are saying, Mom, I need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The dog is barking. Laundry needs to be done, and you probably didn't wash your hair this week. There's so many different things that are going on when you're working from home that people they're just now finding out that they really have to address it. Do you need to work a different shift? Would you be better off working after your children are asleep? I mean, there are so many questions, so many things to consider. And I think what I'm hearing from you is that you need, as a boss or as an organization, is that instead of just, okay, y'all do this, and great, I mean, you're turning in terrific work, but if you're not checking in with your individuals who work with you and finding out how you can really help them, I think you're missing a big, big boat there.
Oh my gosh, so true. In fact, I had one boss and in another organization, I again was virtual, they were in a different time zone, and my children were young, and I tended to be a night owl at the time. So I would work starting, do a lot of my intense deep thought, and a lot of my productive work would start about 10 p.m. I'd go till about 2 a.m. and then go to sleep, get up and take the kids to school and so forth. And I would send him emails, and one day he calls me on it. He says, "Why am I getting an email from you at 2 a.m?" I said, "Because that's when I work most effectively." And he says, "Well, no, I want you to be working from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., his time zone, which is right when I'd be getting up, getting the kids ready for school, taking them to school." And I was a single mother at the time. And I'm thinking, there's no freaking way I can work those hours. And he did not want to have that conversation. So, and here I probably should not admit this on radio, but I learned how to schedule my emails in Outlook. So I would still do my work till from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. I would just schedule the emails to show up in his email box about 6:17 a.m., about 7:23 a.m. And throughout the morning, he'd be getting emails from me while I was taking the kids to school, because that would be the other point to resilience is learn your tools, learn the tech, have your technology work for you. Not necessarily a good fit, because he just didn't want to have the conversation about, wait a second, you do have three children, and hey, you're still getting the work done, and okay, I might be sleeping while you're working and you're busy while, you know what, let's have that open, transparent conversation about how can we get that work done together.
Exactly. Right?
It's not about the clock anymore.
No, and, there are an awful lot of cases that I'm seeing, or complaints, if you will, where bosses, and I'm going to class them under the bad boss. I mean, they are wanting mm-hmm. to stand over your virtual shoulder. They want to know where mm-hmm. you are. They want to be able to see that you're working. And listen, we all have our own biorhythms. I mean, I'm wide awake at 3:18 in the morning. Don't ask me why. I don't know. But I do my best work in the early, early morning, and then around 2:00 in the afternoon, I'm just dead. I'm gone. I can't function anymore. I don't even try. But then about 7 p.m., it comes roaring back and off I go. So even though I work for myself and I don't really have a boss except me, and she's kind of a cranky woman, I learned to follow my own biorhythms, because if I don't, I make mistakes, and some of them are, how do I fix this? Mistakes. So you have to know when and where you do your best work. And if your boss can't accept that, what do you do, Maureen? Do you go to HR? Do you find another job? What do you tell people that they can at least look at before going, screw you, I quit, which would be my first thing to do. But
sure.
I have mentioned I'm a cranky person.
Well, this comes back to that biomimicry of knowing when to fly south, right?
You can't just have a
knee-jerk reaction. Oh, wait, it's starting to snow. No, you probably noticed it was getting colder, right? Doing the preparation, yes, you have to pay attention to the proverbial weather that's out there, right? And sometimes, yes, the answer is it's time to find a new opportunity. But they don't happen to be falling out of the trees right now. So you might need to be strategic. And in the meantime, what can you do? Yeah, maybe it is go to HR. Maybe it's try to have an honest conversation with your boss. If that's not received, which unfortunately often it's not,
yeah.
Use the tools and resources that are available to you. From, like, I used, I didn't have an HR. It was a very small organization. I didn't have HR to go to. He was HR. He was the boss. He was the director, all in one. So I used my tools and resources so I could adapt how I was working to satisfy him. I don't think he ever caught on. Also, then look strategically. I did end up leaving that organization. Look strategically, know what you want, and keep your eyes and ears open to that. But, there are some strategies from an open, honest kind of candid conversation, which sometimes works as well. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But when it doesn't, go to your other resources as well. And sometimes that might just be part of your tribe, your personal tribe that you can vent to, that you can strategize with, that can be a support for you as you're dealing with this bad boss.
Great advice. Listen, we're still recording. We're no longer streaming. So if anybody was in the chat room, we lost them, but they can come back and listen in a little bit when this winds up in iTunes and Stitcher and iHeartRadio and every place it goes. But is there anything that we missed here? Is there anything that you would like to share with the audience before I let you go?
I think you've been very thorough, and thanks for bringing up the biomimicry, because in the busyness of my morning this morning, that was a good catch to bring in. And, you know, I think just the message I would want to leave people with is to be purposeful, right? To be purposeful, just like the duck is purposeful applying the oil to their feathers every single day. They're doing small little things that help them stay afloat. And just the same way, whether it be, as we talked about, sleep or exercise or mental health, be purposeful in doing the small things that do work together to help you be more resilient and help you to stay afloat. And reach out to others. If you see that someone else is struggling, reach out to them and help them. Share your oil, right? Be purposeful in helping others stay afloat as well.
I love that. And I meant to mention earlier, but I kept interrupting you, and I don't like to do that. And I'm sorry, but it's fascinating chatting with you, so that's my excuse. But when you're talking about, you know, sharing the oil, the word that kept popping in, this little bubble, thought bubble over my head, was maintenance. Because the ducks are constantly preening. I always thought they had fleas. I had no idea. It's like, why do they keep doing that? But once they've figured out what works for them and what is critical to their survival, if you will, they maintain it. And I think that's an important thought process as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the lesson from the aviculture specialist who said, yeah, even an adult duck can drown if they don't have access to clean water. It's maintenance for our health, our mental health, the work we need to do, and it's daily. And if you create an operating rhythm for yourself where you can do the work you need to do and integrate aspects of resilience into your everyday life, you will start to see that end result of being more resilient over the course of time.
Oh, I love what you just said, operating rhythm. That's brilliant. I hadn't even thought of it like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, the daily planning and prepping and strategizing and meditating, whatever it is that creates your daily operating and annual operating rhythm, and you'll be more resilient throughout the years.
Can you hear me?
I can now. I lost you for a second, I think.
Okay. I must have punched the wrong button. So before I let you go, where can people find you online?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, kind of. I'm on Instagram, kind of. But I'm on Facebook. Maureen Ori is often where you would find me. And the Workplace Learning and Performance Group goes by WLP Group. Our website is WLPgroup.com. And we have a business page on LinkedIn and Facebook. But more importantly, I'm also building a community of individuals around resilience. So I have a Stay Afloat page on Facebook. And I have launched recently a YouTube channel with daily or regular resilience reminders that I started at the beginning of COVID. So I would love it if people subscribe to the channel, go and like and watch the videos. And but a lot of it is centered around the WLP group or Maureen Ori.
Oh, I
so
subscribed
thank you for your time. This has been truly a pleasure, Denise. Thank you so much for having me today. It's been wonderful chatting with you.
Oh, thank you. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And thank you for sending me your book. It's one of the few that gets to lay on my desk and not get, you know, put back up on the bookcase. So I really appreciate that.
I'm honored.
I'm one of those people. I'm always wiping things off and cleaning things. And, you know, it's instinct to put things away. And your book and another book from a friend of mine who's also been a podcast guest here is called Revolutionary Conversations. And we were just talking about conversations. Those two books just don't get budged. I move a cat off of them and I wipe them down and then I open them up again. And they just don't get shelved. But listen, thank you so much. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you again.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.